Welcome to the INSS English podcast series, where you can listen to researchers discuss their findings and hear about research in progress. The INSS podcast addresses a range of current developments which carry implications for Israel's national security, whether in the international and regional spheres or in the local Israeli arena. I'm Sarah Foyer. I'm a research fellow at the INSS. And with me today is retired Brigadier General and INSS Deputy Director for Research, Itai Brun.
Hi, Itai.
So today we're going to be discussing the impact of the corona crisis on states across the Middle East and consider implications of that regional impact for Israel. So Itai, perhaps I'll start by just offering a brief overview of the conditions as we see them emerging in some key states across the region, offer maybe one or two more general observations about this moment that the region finds itself in, and then I'll turn to you and ask for an initial assessment anyway of what all of this might mean for Israel. How does that sound?
Sounds fine. Go ahead, Sal.
Okay. So first of all, two just disclaimers. The first is that, of course, the data and the information that we have on states across the region is still very incomplete, and in some cases, perhaps even unreliable, given that there may be efforts on the part of some of these regimes to conceal some of the information. And the second disclaimer is just that these numbers are changing every day, and the dynamics are evolving very rapidly. But a snapshot of the region suggests that on the eve of the crisis, you could think of the states falling in maybe three baskets. One were those countries that were really in the midst of war or armed conflict. A second category were contained states that had been experiencing real social unrest in the form of mass protests. And then there was the third category of countries where you could observe a relative, if fragile, calm. So if we just pick out a few examples from each of these baskets, taking that first category, we consider Syria. There, the regime of Bashar al-Assad only acknowledged the first instance of corona on March 22nd, after weeks of denying that the virus was even present in the country. Independent estimates have placed the likely number of infections there at well beyond 2,500, many of them reportedly stemming from contact with Iranians who had returned in recent weeks to join the Shiite militias fighting in Idlib and eastern Syria. The Syrian regime, in the end, did what we've now seen kind of across the board in many of these countries, partially sealed its borders, closed schools, banned pilgrimage to holy sites, it canceled Friday prayers, and implemented a curfew in certain cities. If we turn to the second basket of states, that is to say those where we had seen, particularly in 2019, an uptick in social unrest, mass protests, and the like. So here I might highlight the situation in Iran, Lebanon, and Iraq. Iran does appear to be the hardest hit country in the region. It has officially confirmed over 25,000 infections, a death toll of now more than 1,800, but there's likely a great discrepancy between official and actual cases. The government was widely criticized at home for its lack of transparency. It did suspend Friday prayers at first for three consecutive weeks, but it only shut down shrines and holy sites much later. And the AP was reporting as late as March 18th that there were markets in Tehran that had even remained packed with people. The government did something it hadn't done since the 1960s. It turned to the International Monetary Fund for a $5 billion emergency loan to assist in combating the virus. And of course, we've seen a lot of back and forth heated rhetoric between Iran and the United States, with Iran blaming the U.S. Sanctions for hampering the country's ability to adequately stem the epidemic. Iran's regional footprint has been linked to the outbreak of corona in Lebanon, where the first confirmed case in February was thought to have come from a visit of an Iranian delegation there. The official number of infections has by now risen to nearly 500. The government declared a medical state of emergency, closed schools, supermarkets, and pharmacies do remain open. but the banks have closed, which caused a lot of panic in Lebanon, given the country's already precarious fiscal situation. And lastly, I would just point to Iraq, where activists had been leading demonstrations against the government since October, but they were forced to suspend their protests. There are now reports that they've tried to kind of revive the protests online. Airports have been closed. Baghdad imposed a curfew. And a number of provinces have enforced lockdowns. Corona came to Iraq at a kind of politically fragile moment. It has recently, with the recent nomination, although not yet confirmed, nomination of a new prime minister. Iraq sealed its border to Iranians wishing to enter, but it has continued to permit Iraqi citizens to come home. And of course, widespread concerns that they may be bringing additional cases of the virus into the country. So the last category of those relatively calm states and territories, here I might just point to the West Bank and Gaza, which have essentially largely copied Israel's approach to handling the outbreak, imposing rather severe restrictions in an effort to contain the virus. And when it comes to the West Bank, in any case, there has been some rather remarkable coordination between Israel and the PA surrounding the containment efforts. Even in Gaza, things have remained quiet, in part because Hamas is preoccupied with trying to prevent an outbreak there, and I think in part also because Israel has implemented some relief measures of the Strip. Egypt and Jordan, countries that have formal peace agreements with Israel, the numbers in Egypt are likely well beyond the roughly 400 that the state has officially confirmed. In Jordan, there was actually a relatively aggressive approach to containing the virus, following initial concerns that the public wasn't really heeding the advice to remain at home. And so there you've seen the state of emergency, the government imposing a lockdown, and so on and so forth. So I just want to offer three broader observations very briefly, and then Itay, I want to ask you to bring it home for us and say something about what all of this could possibly mean for Israel. The first observation I would make is that it does really look like the Middle East is probably going to experience a rather severe outbreak of this virus, given the population density in some places and the fact that there are these pockets of millions of refugees scattered throughout the region. So states that were engulfed in armed conflict prior to the virus, they may be the most handicapped and the least transparent in dealing with it. And so the human toll there will likely be very high, but really any state with large concentrations of refugees and a high population density, places like Lebanon and Jordan and Egypt, they're all facing the same challenge of their governing systems just simply not being able to handle the burden associated with containing the virus. A second observation is that in those countries where we saw mass protest movements last year, I think Corona presented a dilemma for protesters because all of a sudden congregating in large groups became a health risk. And by now, most of those protests have dissipated. I think the government have sort of gotten a temporary reprieve. But it's also possible that if the regimes manage to cope with the crisis reasonably well, they could ultimately emerge in a strengthened position. And lastly, I would just say that the relative stability even of some of those remaining states presumably might make them marginally better equipped to handle the outbreak. But even in cases like Turkey and Morocco, relatively sturdy states, I think the very integration with the global economy that was facilitating a lot of that stability could make them more vulnerable to at least the economic shocks reverberating from some of these containment measures. So I will shut up and ask Itay to maybe consider some scenarios for Israel. What does all of this mean for us here at home?
Thank you, Sarah, for your interesting insights and observations. When we were looking at the Middle East in their recent years, we were describing the Middle East as in time of transition. The old order ended, a new one is yet to be defined, and in between, the region is in kind of a transition period. And like in the seasons of the years, transition period is characterized by uncertainty, instability, and volatility. And when this basic situation description is meeting the corona crisis, I think the level of uncertainty is dramatically increasing. The unprecedented nature of the crisis makes it almost impossible to predict its duration, its effect on countries, groups, and individuals, and the connection or the implications of the regional, the global aspects on the regional aspect. So when we are trying to think about the future, I think that it makes it, of course, impossible to predict the future, what may happen or what will happen. But we can help decision makers and the general public to think about the future. And I think the main tool for thinking about the future is the scenario approach. So we were brainstorming here in the INSS about what might happen in the Middle East during the time of corona. Now, I want to emphasize that it's not that we are saying that these scenarios will happen, will occur. We are offering food for thought. We are describing the scenarios for decision makers and the general public that are preoccupied with the corona crisis to think about what might happen in the region. Generally speaking, based on your analysis of the region, at present it looks as if the risks of military escalation in the Middle East have declined, as all regional actors are focused on the corona crisis. But what might happen? So there are some scenarios that we believe their likelihood or probability increased because of the corona crisis. For example, you talked about the possible collapse of regimes and government systems because of the corona crisis. And this can lead to chaos and the collapse of the system, not enabling the governments to deal with the situation. So collapse of and regime and of government systems is one scenario that its likelihood probably increased. The second might be security escalation vis-a-vis the Gaza Strip. This can happen if Hamas assesses that Israel is more restrained in its military response, but I don't think this is the main issue. It can happen because Hamas' ability to govern, to control the area, may deteriorate, and groups such as the PIJ, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, can be more effective. So the second scenario that we have to think about it is security escalation vis-a-vis Gaza. A third scenario that is being impacted by the corona crisis might be a wave of terrorism in the West Bank, probably not by organizations, but by individuals. And in that sense, I think that what is happening in the Israeli prisons with the Palestinians prisoners, this might have an effect about such a wave. The force,
I mean, if they end up getting sicker from the virus?
Yes, this might affect people in the West Bank to do something, maybe kidnapping attacks and things like that. The fourth scenario is connected with ISIS and with the Islamic State. And I think this is something that we should pay attention to, because in difference vis-a-vis all the other players, ISIS is not responsible currently to a territory. So it is not dealing with the corona crisis itself. So it is free to do things. And the global attention toward ISIS is probably decreasing. So ISIS can either take over some territories or even conduct terror attacks. And this is something that we in Israel and other nations should pay attention to. Two additional scenarios that are connected with the corona crisis is an American withdrawal from Iraq and Syria. This might occur in view of the spread of the virus throughout these territories, or due to a serious decline in President Trump's popularity stemming from the way he is dealing with the coronavirus. Russia, we saw Putin taking advantage of the situation, increasing its ability to rule Russia until 2036, breaking the partnership with OPEC. So for Putin, there are opportunities here in the region, and they can be on the expense of the United States. Moscow can try to push the Gulf states to weaken their commitment to the United States, purchasing Russian weapons and doing other things. The same, by the way, might happen with China. China's posture is increasing because the way it is dealing with the corona crisis, and this also can affect its regional position, posture in the Middle East. And the seventh and the last scenario that is connected with that is linked to the corona crisis might be the weakening of the Gulf monarchies. Low oil and natural gas prices and the spread of the virus could weaken their regime and their financial strength and to cause an internal stability. So this is another scenario that should be taken into account. Now, there are three additional scenarios that are not connected directly with the coronavirus, but might happen under the cover of the corona crisis. The first is connected with Iran. The spread of the coronavirus, no doubt, caught the Iranian regime in one of its lowest points. The emerging oil crisis joined other severe negative economic circumstances. Distrust in the regime is low, and this is why, generally speaking, we think that it goes against escalation. But Iran might think, and again, we don't have data information that support this scenario, but Iran might think that it's time for lower costs, and it might bring Iran to advance its nuclear program. Maybe more probable, and I think we saw yesterday a sign for this, is the ease of the sanctions on Iran. And we saw Secretary Pompeo yesterday announcing that the US might think about easing the sanctions on Iran, and it will be, I think, very difficult to renew the pressure on Tehran after the pandemic. Two additional scenarios are advancement of the precision project in the northern front, or increased escalation between Israel and Iran in Syria. Again, it is not connected with the coronavirus, but this might be as an opportunity to do something, as I said previously, under the cover of the corona crisis. Our basic assumption, I remind, is that such an escalation can happen as unintended escalation, not deliberately against the policy and the interests of both sides. And the last scenario that should be taken into account is a widespread cyber attack, global or focused on Israel, as all of us, most of us, are sitting in our homes, using our computers, using the net. This is a perfect time for cyber attack, and that should be taken into account. So these are some scenarios, again, that are not all of them, not all of them are emerging from the corona crisis, but all of them should be taken into account. And it's kind of a food for thought, both to the decision makers and the general public.
Right. Now, I should say, just before we close, that before our listeners go reaching for their Prozac, I mean, I think what we had thought out to do here today is to try and outline, first of all, the state of affairs in the region, which is to some extent worrying, and also outline some of the scenarios that you presented are admittedly negative scenarios that Israel should be thinking about. But it's also worth considering, to what extent will there be opportunities that emerge from the crisis? Perhaps even opportunities for Israel to pursue and to build on some of its coordination and cooperation with states in the region, all of which are finding themselves now in the midst of this very, very serious crisis. So it'll be interesting to see whether any positive developments.
Yeah, so maybe it's a good time, Sarah, to say that next Monday at 1300, 1 o'clock Israeli time, we will have an open conference. We are doing it by the Zoom platform that is going to deal with the implications of the corona crisis on the region, on the regional system. And then we are going to discuss also the opportunity.
Great. Well, this concludes our podcast conversation for today. You are welcome to listen to all of our podcasts by going to the INSS website at www.inss.org.il, where you'll find a featured section for our podcasts. You're also invited to sign up for our newsletter and receive alerts for the Institute's various research programs. Thanks for listening. Stay healthy and take care.